Welcome to Cancria, home of Canada's queer medium. My name is Luke Smith.
And my name is Sebastian.
I'm going to turn you up just a smidge, because that was a little quiet. Oh, no,
how
you're way too
loud.
No, you know what? It's fine. We're all fine. We're going to be fine. I wanted to start off with... we have lots of Canadian stories today. Very excited about that. But I want to start off with something not very Canadian, and that is... the incredible and talented Lily Savage.
Mm-hmm. 3,500 people and two bar staff. One of them's had a hip replacement. She's only just come back to work.
There's a certain character and a certain... just like working housewife vibe mm-hmm. to Lily Savage. Do you know who Lily Savage is?
I know the pedigree that Lily Savage comes from. There is a certain style of... kind of a Dame Edna style of lovely old lady who lives next door drag character.
She was nothing like a lovely old lady next door. Lily Savage was the drag persona of the incredibly talented British broadcaster Paul O'Grady. Now, unfortunately, Paul O'Grady passed away earlier last week. Now, the reason why we're mentioning it on today's show is because we've talked a lot in the past about the cultural impact of RuPaul mm-hmm. and RuPaul's Drag Race in particular, and sort of that the ubiquitous of the New York ball scene on drag, and sort of what that looks like. Well, Dame Edna is, you know, the RuPaul of Australia. Mm-hmm. In terms of cultural impact.
Yes.
And Lily Savage was really the RuPaul of Britain in terms of drag cultural impact. And we still see that, you know, we see a little bit less now because RuPaul has had a generational impact now in Britain. Yep. But for many, many years, you know, British drag queens, they didn't sing and lip sync necessarily, but they would walk the stage and do one of the most hilariously filthy stand-up routines that you can mm-hmm. possibly ever imagine.
It was more a form of stand-up, yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, Lily Savage reminds me if it's, you know, it's after work, the ladies have come off their shift doing, you mm-hmm. know, factory work or cleaning or whatever, and, you know, salt-of-the-earth kind of ladies that have put mm-hmm. in a hard day's graft. And they come in, they've had a couple of G&Ts, and now this. And she's the chattiest in the group. That's Lily Savage right there.
Dot from EastEnders
is a very good very good comparison. So, yeah, we were pretty gutted. Even RuPaul tweeted condolences for the passing of the incredibly talented Paul O'Grady. What I didn't know until recently is that Paul O'Grady essentially retired his drag persona of Lily Savage in 2005 after his late husband had passed away. Very much feeling that... his late husband had been such a key part in that character mm-hmm. that when he passed, Lily passed as well. Mm-hmm. This is a huge blow to LGBT folks in Britain. Mm-hmm. Paul O'Grady has done incredible work advocating for gay rights in Britain over decades and decades as one of Britain's most favored broadcasters. He worked at the Battersea Dog Shelter and had like BBC primetime shows trying to get dogs rehomed, and he was a key entertainment presenter as well. Very much a precursor to Graham Norton. I feel okay. like a lot of folks may be aware of Graham Norton. I think some of his interviews have gone viral, and people may be a little bit familiar with him. But it's very sad to see a generational icon passing away and that legacy of drag moving a little bit with him.
Mm-hmm. The Canadian equivalent would be Mado in Montreal.
Mm.
Also very rough, very salt of the earth. More of a stand-up routine than what most people would think of as being a drag act. But Mado actually did sing and occasionally lip-sync, but mostly actually sang. And encouraged people in the Montreal scene to have an act that really was more like that as well. More of a stand-up routine with actual singing and less lip syncing, and you saw a little bit of that in the Drag Race Canada when some of the Montreal queens were on there actually performing and doing a lot more clowning kind of routines.
Yeah. And we could see the legacy of Lily Savage in Bag of Chips and the Vivian on Drag Race UK. Our Otia Coffee was also another hilarious iteration of that legacy of satirical pub entertainer drag. You know what I mean? It's not ballroom. It is slapdash, funny and fun, and maybe not appropriate for your grandmother unless she's had a couple of gin and tonics, in which case anything goes. So that's where we are. I don't know. It's
you didn't know my grandmother.
Well, I've seen you after a couple of gin and tonics, Sebastian, and if it's even remotely hereditary, I suspect I may be able to jump to a conclusion or two. So that's we'll leave it at that. Although it has been a little while since we got gin drunk, the two of us, so maybe that'll be our ambition for this weekend.
Eurovision does happen in about a month and a half.
It does. I'm in Toronto that weekend, so that's a great point. If anyone wants to watch Eurovision with us, let us know. We might try and arrange a small viewing party, as it were, for long-time listeners of our show. We go a bit Eurovision mad. For those who have no idea what I'm talking about, which I think would be astonishing, but there we go. Eurovision is the largest singing competition in the world. It is absolutely massive. It is streamed to the whole of Europe, pretty much, including Russia when they participate and aren't busy invading anybody. But then also Eurovision includes those famous European countries, Israel and Australia. They also participate. I believe last year or the year before, it was streamed in China, the United States, and Canada. I think TVO carries it.
You know, a lot of people make comments about Israel and Australia, but nobody seems to blink when you bring up the fact that Azerbaijan is in there.
I mean, Azerbaijan is a much closer European neighbor than Australia. You know what I mean? You could walk to Azerbaijan. It might take you a few days, but you would really struggle to not drown if you tried to walk to Australia. I'm just, that's essentially where I'm going to leave it. But it is a ridiculously camp show. I don't have any Eurovision songs lined up for today, so count your lucky stars.
And it's also worth pointing out, depending on the year, it's either the Olympics, the FIFA World Finals, or Eurovision are the most watched program.
Yeah,
per viewer, and you count it in tens of millions. Usually, the number of people watching the grand finals.
Absolutely,
so it is a very, very, very watched program for sure.
I feel like it falls in or around the coronation of King Charles, and I suspect it will probably have more viewers than the coronation of King Charles. I'm just quickly Googling it.
I kind of miss the various speeches and announcements and addresses from the Queen. She was kind of like, I don't know, she was charming and she was always optimistic and she knew how to say, you know, be realistic that things aren't perfect without being negative and be optimistic that things will get better without being saccharine. I don't know. She had very good speech writers and a very good delivery. And I hope that King Charles can be even half as good as she was.
Well, he recently was in Berlin presenting to the speaking to the Chancellor of Berlin and former Chancellor Angela Merkel and spoke in German. Of course, when you are the heir to the throne and don't have to pay for anything and have a massive estate that's funded by the taxpayer, it leaves you some time to learn German, is essentially. Well, good news for the royal enthusiasts and the Eurovision fans. They are on subsequent weeks. It is the first weekend in May is going to be the coronation of King Charles. And the second weekend in May, the event that I'm particularly looking forward to is Eurovision Song Contest. Now, weirdly enough, this is a bit of a nightmare for the auntie, the BBC. And that is because they are two of the largest live events in broadcasting back to back. Because, of course, the BBC hands over its entire schedule, does a massive production for the coronation. And as the broadcaster of Eurovision out of Liverpool, it then rinses, repeats, and does the same thing again. So it's going to be, I don't know, the BBC is going to be have a very, very busy week between those two events. Now, what a gay radio show. We don't usually end up talking about King Charles. I do talk a lot about Eurovision, but we're going to move on from that. Now, first of all, last week I messaged Global Affairs Canada and we reached out to them regarding
I remember this. Yeah, we messaged them regarding whether or not they had a statement about the situation in Uganda. And they told us that they would respond to us before the show began. And in fact, they responded to us 5 minutes after we finished going live.
It was actually
last week.
5 minutes before the end of the show.
Okay.
4:55 p.m. Now, the statement, essentially, Uganda has introduced one of the most anti-homophobic, anti-gay laws in the world, giving even Florida a run for its money. And we have seen protests in Toronto. I'll play a short clip of that in just a few moments. But we were concerned that where the Secretary of State in the United States had been asking about, you know, essentially what impact this could have on things like the flow of aid from the United States to Uganda. And in the United Kingdom, members of parliament there were asking about potentially fast-tracking LGBTQ asylum seekers who are looking to flee under this far more oppressive law. Now, the Government of Canada has issued us with this following statement. The Government of Canada is deeply concerned by the anti-gay legislation that was approved by Uganda's Parliament last week. In respective statements, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Foreign Minister Melanie Joly have both immediately and forcefully condemned the bill on March 22nd. This bill seeks to broadly violate the human rights and fundamental freedoms of LGBTQ plus Ugandans, exposing them to systemic persecution, oppression, violence, as well as increased risk of life terms in prison and the death penalty. Canada stands with LGBTQ plus community in Uganda and around the world and calls on the government of Uganda to revoke this legislation. Canada also unequivocally opposes the use of the death penalty in all cases, everywhere. It is a form of punishment that is incompatible with human rights and human dignity. As is standard practice, we follow developments such as these very closely and are prepared to take the necessary steps to ensure the safety and security of Canadians. Canada provides funding through organizations that are experienced in supporting vulnerable communities and which work closely with local actors to achieve project goals, despite challenging human rights environments. Now, the piece at the end there, that's the end of the quote, the piece at the end there I think relates to my very pointed question about the flow of Canadian aid into Uganda about this. So I do appreciate them including some comments and comments on that. Just to close it out, what I will do is mention the statement from Minister Joly saying the Uganda government's anti-homosexuality bill, that's the actual name of the bill, is shocking and yet another example of the discrimination and violence the 2S LGBTQI plus community continues to face. Everyone should be free to be who they are and they love who they have and not live in fear because of it. And then likewise, Justin Trudeau on the 22nd of March tweeted, "This legislation passed by the Ugandan Parliament yesterday, known as the Anti-Homosexuality Act, is appalling and abhorrent. No one nowhere should have to live in fear because of who they are or whom they love. We strongly urge Ugandan lawmakers to reconsider this legislation." Now, I believe Kristen Wong Tam, who I believe is a Toronto Centre NDP, I want to say MP, was at the protest at Young. They went through Dundas Square, through Young Street, over to Queen's Park. We have a small clip that Krishna Wong Tam posted. I'm not sure if we can hear it.
LGBT lives. They've just passed a horrific law that actually criminalizes homosexuality, and we will not stand for it. From Toronto to Kampala, we will resist homophobia and transphobia. Yes. Join us, Canadians. Join us. Get loud. Let's defeat this law. Yeah.
So there was a lot going on in the background there, and obviously it being in the middle of a protest. I think what this demonstrates, and there was a press conference early on the Friday, what this demonstrates is that there is a very strong, very large and vocal Ugandan expatriate community here in Canada. Lots of Ugandans living in places such as Toronto and other major urban centres. And this is incredibly concerning. You know, this is unbelievably concerning, especially when we consider that under this law now in Uganda, if you don't out and hand over your loved ones to prosecutors and the police, you yourself could face fines and potential other very serious consequences. So this could become a witch hunt against entire families, against people who are disagreed with in the, you know, in the community. It is a horrific law. Two of the lawmakers in Uganda pointing out, obviously, that it would be amazing if this even passes constitutional muster, let alone decent human rights. I don't know if you've seen any more on it.
The only thing that I've seen, one of the things that concerns me is if we are taking refugees, what will be the port of escape? Because many of the neighboring countries equally have harsh laws, maybe not laws quite as harsh. The one exception that I've been able to find is actually Mozambique, which is one of their direct neighbors, have recently decriminalized same-sex relationships. So Mozambique could be a port of escape. Angola and Botswana as well, but they're not. That I think Sudan is between Uganda and Angola, Botswana, and then Lesotho, which is surrounded by South Africa, at which point you may as well just be in South Africa, which would definitely be a safe port of escape. And that's actually something that always concerns me when you have crises like this, is will the neighboring countries allow aid to at least pick people up for escape from there? And in some cases, like in Chechnya, many of the neighboring countries were not willing. So people would have to go pretty far in order to escape from the Chechen region. And this is actually one of the things that really worries me about Uganda. We can offer to take in more refugees, but how will they get here? So I know that there are, you know, they could go to embassies or the other one.
Consulates,
that's right, in Uganda, and try to present themselves to those facilities, but they may have their gates shut by the Ugandan government. And I don't know, the whole thing is pretty concerning. I haven't heard that much, but I do know that South Africa has been putting together a case about what to do about this and trying to confer with other neighboring countries on how to treat the situation.
Well, the pressure on Uganda is certainly mounting, mounting with Google, Microsoft, and a raft of other companies that form the Open for Business Coalition. Now, these major employers have said, look, it's going to be that much more difficult to, first of all, have business in Uganda. Especially with the impact that it has in terms of hiring, keeping, and hosting talented employees under this threat of this law. They also point out that this kind of law has a severe impact on the economy. They point actually towards a study on Kenya, which does have anti-gay laws. And the 2019 study found that the Kenyan economy lost the equivalent of 1.7% of its GDP annually as a result of businesses and others not operating in that country as a direct result of its anti-gay legislation. So if the human rights angle and the let's not persecute people literally to death argument doesn't go very far, maybe the international tax dollars and business dollars will convince Museveni, the president of Uganda, to not sign this particular law.
I mean, economics is one of the arguments for decriminalizing homosexuality in Canadian history. So in the 60s and 70s, back when you could be arrested simply for being gay, they actually started crunching the numbers and found that the cost on the police force, I don't have the numbers in front of me because it didn't occur to me to look them up before this episode, but they actually did crunch the numbers and they found that it was incredibly expensive per arrest. The amount of investigation and fact-finding and confirmation and blah, 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 blah that goes into the usual kind of arrest, it was incredibly expensive just to put somebody in prison. And they started having to ask themselves whether or not the cost was worth it. And if you are a country that has a struggling GDP due to other reasons as well, which there are regional issues in East Africa. And actually, one of the major problems that you get to have is that if you look at a topographic map, it's just really hard to build trains and boats. Like, moving goods around the country is really difficult. It's not an easy country to navigate. So they're going to have problems no matter what. But anyway,
it seems like
really
a cutting your nose to spite your face kind of situation.
It's another drain. There's other ways. I don't know. I was about to say there's other ways of accomplishing the same thing, but I don't think we want that. But it's more to the point that it's just so incredibly expensive to enforce this kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Well,
to what end? Yeah, to what benefit?
Some have argued that this is just politically low-hanging fruit. This is creating a boogeyman, in this case a very gay boogeyman, to distract from actual issues that parliamentarians in Uganda are opting not to focus on.
So it doesn't matter if they catch people. They just have to look like they're trying to catch people.
Yeah, look busy so that they don't look too closely at what you're actually doing or not doing.
I mean, every government in the world is doing that to some degree, but not all
the time. Are you trying to suggest that the government of Canada or the Ontario government is just looking busy on occasions and not actually being productive?
Yeah, but without the human rights abuses. So,
well,
I mean in the grand scheme of busy work. Yeah.
All right.
Arguing over a bridge that should exist and everyone agrees it should exist, but people still argue it over anyway. That is a very different beast from this.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Before we jump to let's tackle a recent brouhaha in Vancouver just after our first track. This is Larissa Music's Joan of Arc. And let me find the right button here. And we will be back just after this.
Walk inside ropes,
Hello and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name remains Luke Smith.
Ooh, interesting. Very interesting. And I see you're wearing your shirt that says love on it.
No, I think these are just paint stripes.
Yes, in Japanese calligraphy.
No, I don't think they are. Are they? Is that really?
Yeah, that's Japanese calligraphy.
Oh, well, I just thought that they were just like dashing splotches of paint stripe. I'm going to sound incredibly insensitive. Now, our audience can't physically see me because, of course, mm-hmm. and you can over Zoom here. But my shirt has a number of dashes, swirls, mm-hmm. twirls that don't look remotely like words or even symbols. But yes. Somewhere on my body, you have found what looks like... Is it this bit here?
Yeah, it's also on your sleeve. It's also on your collar. It's repeating all over.
What does it say?
It says love.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm okay with that. That checks out. I'm happy with that. All right.
Or I in Japanese. But yeah, that's grass-style calligraphy. It's actually pretty well done, too.
It's a beautiful shirt. I saw it, and I was like, ooh, that's a beautiful shirt. Picked it up. And it's got this... It's a really nice, like, stretchy material. I want to say spandex, but not spandex. You know when you get clothes that have, like, you know, 3 or 4% spandex in it, and it's got that nice bit of... stretch. It's anyway. Enough about
and
my
it
shirt
looks like
that
the
no
color
one can
is halfway
see.
Between like navy and eggplant. It's a very interesting dark blue.
Yeah, it's more like it splits the difference between black and navy. You know what I mean? Like it's a closer. Let me hang on a second. There, my poor listeners are gonna have to.
Okay. Yeah. I see. Yeah.
There we go. Of course, we're using the medium of radio to describe my choice of shirt today. So that's where we're at, which is a much more pleasant conversation than where we're going next. In Vancouver this past weekend was the Trans Day of... the International Day of Trans Visibility.
Yes.
The whole point of this day, before the raft of anti-trans legislation that has sprung up, it must be contagious, this anti-trans legislation. It seems to be the cause du jour in terms of legislative priority.